Right, so this is my talk, Practicing Forgiveness. So if you want to put the first slide up, Janet, thanks. So we've been looking at this series on following Jesus in a complex and divided world. So I know we've been sort of, you know, doing it bits and pieces over the past couple of months, so I thought I'd give a little recap for those of you that have missed any of the talks. Rachel started by giving us an introduction, and she picked up on these three key aspects that are necessary to transform relationships, and they're the bullet points on the right. Be curious. We need to learn about others if we want to transform our relationship with them. Be present. Really be there, listen to what they're saying. And then reimagine. Because unless we can imagine relationships as God really intended, then we're not going to get there. And then we had Glenn and Kathy talking about God's call and how we are all called. That, you know, it's not like this special thing. Some people are called, you know, this is the amazing thing that God wants you to do, and the rest of us are doing nothing. God calls each one of us. And it's quite simple that he calls us to live a life following Jesus, doing what Jesus would do in the situations that we find ourselves in, relating to others as Jesus related to others. And then Rachel expanded on that, looking at the next section, crossing divides. And she talked a lot about the different things that she has been involved in with asylum seekers, and how we are all different, but we are all human. We're all created by God, and we're all created to be in relationship with him and with each other. But obviously there'll be times that we disagree. We're not all the same. We're going to disagree. I'm not quite sure who was meant to be doing the navigating disagreeing. We seem to have skipped that, but obviously we've just had an introduction to sort of, you know, how we can easily navigate disagreements. So if you need any newspaper, I think the co-op around the corner is open, so you can go get your newspapers and deal with your disagreements that way. Or perhaps we'll do the fourth part, which I was given, practicing forgiveness. And then the last bit of the series is going to be risking hope, and that is the theme of our church weekend. So if you're not coming on the church weekend, you'll just have to make that one up, but hopefully we'll learn something next week as well. So I'm going to start my talk on practicing forgiveness by reading a poem, Gidding Hughes' poem. It's called Night Will Fall on You. Night will fall on you. Of course it will. You will find yourself wandering the desert of your failures. You will stand by the deathbed of your dreams, helpless and afraid. What hope do we have then? Beloved, when the Spirit wrapped itself in the rabbi's flesh, it declared that we are to have life in all its fullness. Yet we've forgotten that death is part of life, that existence grows from decay. We have forgotten that night is an opportunity to anticipate another sunrise. So we all make mistakes. We fail. It's only human, you know, we're not perfect beings. We're flawed. And the challenge is what we do with those mistakes, how we view them, whether we can recognize that God is with us in the mess, that he's not, you know, made us and left us, that he's here with us. He's holding our hand and he's leading us through. God didn't promise us an easy ride where we're always going to be right and, you know, it's all perfect. It's going to be tough, but God did show us a way to put things right. When I was starting to prepare this talk, Rachel Bright actually sort of sent us some ideas and some little videos. And I watched this video of a white South African called Craig. And he was talking about his experience of apartheid. He grew up in a white neighborhood. He went to a white church, white school. All of his friends were white. The only black and colored people he saw were basically those that were serving them. He knew that apartheid was wrong. He didn't agree with it, but he just lived within the system as it was. You know, he was a child, he was growing up, teenager, just carried on. And then he went to university. And at university, he was really challenged because he started to have friends that were black and colored. And he started to take part in protests and sort of, you know, rail against the system. But he said this interesting thing. If we can have the next slide up, please. He said this: "My experience of life has been shaped by a particular lens that I have been given. And there's a wide range of other lenses that are possible." And what Craig came to realize was that the way that he was viewing the world was very much to do with how he had grown up. And, you know, just getting to know people that had come from a different background really opened up his perspective. And it's the same for us. You know, we aren't growing up in, you know, such a segregated world, but we do have our own lens that we view things through. You know, where we grew up, who our parents are, what we've experienced in life, the hardships we've been through, or whether we've had a really easy ride, the friends that we've made at school, you know, whether they're the same or whether they've shown us, you know, different ways of living. I think it's really key if we want to understand others, that we need to be curious and we need to listen to them and to find out how they view things, to try and widen our perspective. And above all, it's really important that we try to see things the way that God sees things, through his eyes. In the video, Craig goes on to talk about Nelson Mandela's release and the end of apartheid and the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and how you know, he came to understand forgiveness, and how, in fact, South Africa itself became marked as a nation by their understanding of forgiveness, that, you know, other nations in the world looked and went, yeah, they went through some tough times, but they've learned to forgive, and they're different people are living together. But Craig goes on in his story, and he doesn't end with kind of like, oh, it's all fine. He said that he had to come to a place of recognizing his complicity in the story. That although he'd protested, although he'd kind of known it was wrong, he had still grown up in that system, and that he had failed to acknowledge that he had benefited at the expense of others, that he'd been kind of reasonably comfortable with the fact that, yeah, his parents were white, they sent him to a white school, he went to a white church. And he said in the video that he needed to personally ask forgiveness from his friends. The friends that he'd made at university, who, you know, they'd accepted him, he'd accepted them, but he needed to sort of say, look, actually, I'm really sorry, because I have benefited at your expense. And I think I was kind of challenged listening to that thinking about what a vulnerable position he put himself in, to go to someone, you know, not kind of as part of a crowd, not as a kind of like, oh, us as a nation are asking forgiveness, but to say, me personally, I'm asking for forgiveness. It's really easy for us to be part of a crowd. And there's a real vulnerability when we need to stand on our own and acknowledge our part, our choices, and how they affect others around us. And it's not just about expressing your failure and repenting, but it's also about taking that next step, about seeking restitution, about putting things right where it's possible, because sometimes it's not possible. We can't go back, we can't, you know, repeat history, but we can choose to move forward and to get things right next time. It's really hard. but it's also really rewarding because we were made to live in relationship with others. You know, right at the beginning of the Bible, it says that God made man, and then he said, it's not good for man to be alone. We need others. That's how God designed us. But we're going to fail. We're going to upset people. We're going to make mistakes. Those relationships are going to break down. It takes courage to actually move on and build relationship again. Got another quote from Howard. Human relationships are fragile, and it takes courage to have them. And it takes courage because we make mistakes, because we hurt others. But in relationship, that's where we find the greatest joy and love. That's the context in which we get to see a glimpse of God. I found a quote, thanks to Martin, from an American author and social critic who goes by the pen name of Bell Hooks. And this next quote's from her. Most of us are raised to believe that we'll either find love in family or through romantic couplings. However, friendship is the place in which a great majority of us have our first glimpse of redemptive love and caring community. Often, it's just in friendship that we find what true love is. And if we find the courage to engage in relationship with others, if we open ourselves up to love, not that romantic love, but that love we find in Greek, in deep friendship, the Greek love, philia, then there we discover that love is redemptive and forgiving, and it brings freedom. Martin commented to me the other day about how forgiveness is actually quite out of fashion. Society, through like social media, often, you know, labels people as good or bad. So, you know, if you're famous, you know, pop singer or whatever, you know, you might be really good, you know, really in, and then you make a mistake. And then you just get completely slated by media. As my kid says, you get cancelled. You cross that line and you're no longer seen as good, you're seen as bad. And I think it's really hard for someone that has crossed that line, been labelled by the media as, you know, oh, they're bad now, to go back, to be seen as good again. We all make mistakes. None of us are wholly good or bad. We can't say, you know, oh, Andy, you are really good, but sorry, unfortunately, you're bad, okay, right? Sorry. Both of you are amazing, and you're also both flawed, I'm sorry. if we want to see an inclusive, peaceful society, we need forgiveness. We need to see that people are both good and bad, and that we need to learn how to forgive, you know, the failures, and really celebrate the positive things. We need that redemptive love. We need to actually model so that, you know, society and particularly the young people around us can see that, no, you know, it's not you're good or bad. You are a whole person. You are human. You are loved by God. You might have your flaws, but there is forgiveness. And I think if we make a mistake and we're forgiven, it really does encourage us to try better next time. And if we aren't forgiven, then the temptation is just to give up. You know, I think we see that a lot in our criminal system. You know, if someone that's been put in prison doesn't feel forgiven, doesn't feel redeemed, they'll just come out and they'll just repeat offending. We need that forgiveness to spur us on to become better people. Tim spoke a few weeks ago about second chances and about Jesus's reinstatement of Peter. So Peter was a really close friend of Jesus, and when Jesus was arrested and taken before the high priest, Peter denied him three times. Because Peter was really full of fear. You know, his friend had just been arrested, and he was like, I don't know, maybe I'm going to get in trouble too. And he denied Jesus. He denied knowing. He made a mistake. He was human and he failed his friend. But what I love about the story, when you look at it more, is that Peter didn't give up. Peter didn't kind of go, oh, great, you know, there's no forgiveness. I'm doomed now. I think deep down, Peter knew that there was hope. When you come to the resurrection, you know, the women go to the tomb, and then who's the next person that runs into the tomb after the women have reported that Jesus' body is missing? It was Peter. And, you know, when Jesus is standing on the shore and the disciples are out in the boat, who's the one that jumps out of the boat to get to shore first to see Jesus? It was Peter again. And I think what Peter did manage to get right, because he had made many mistakes, what he did get right was that he had hope, that he looked for the sunrise after the dark, that he was open to the possibility of forgiveness, and he acted on that. And he had courage, and he was speaking to Jesus. And Jesus didn't reprimand him or tell him off or speak harshly. No. Jesus just asked Peter, do you love me? And then he entrusted Peter with caring for his sheep, his lambs, for those that were following Jesus. And I think that what's really powerful was that Jesus kind of empowered Peter by asking him those questions, that he kind of gave him the opportunity for redemption by saying, you know, do you love me? Do you love me? And Peter had the opportunity to respond, but it wasn't just a one step, you know, I'm going to forgive you. It was I'm going to give you the next step, the way forward, the opportunity for restoration. And I think that, you know, Peter probably felt quite out of control and trapped when he denied Jesus. He was really afraid. He was in a, you know, in this courtyard and there were people around and he was, you know, nervous, trapped. And on the beach, I think what Jesus does is he puts Peter back in control. He gives him agency. Peter couldn't undeny Jesus. He couldn't go back and put right the mistake he'd made. But he could live the rest of his life declaring boldly that he did know Jesus and who Jesus was. He could lead the church. I think it's kind of easy for us to go, oh yeah, of course Jesus forgave him because he's God and we know God is a forgiving God. But I think it's important that we remember that Jesus was also fully human. He had the option not to forgive. And I think the friendship between Jesus and Peter was restored because there was actually the possibility it wouldn't have been. That, you know, Peter could have been left at that point of denial and had nothing more to do with Jesus, and that could have carried on. But Jesus chose to forgive Peter, and Peter chose to accept that forgiveness. And his life afterwards is and was a statement of the fact that he had fully embraced that forgiveness and he moved on, seeking to do things differently. When the Holy Spirit came on the disciples at Pentecost, it was Peter that stood up and proclaimed that everyone that calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. Peter had made a mistake. He was human, but he moved on because he had accepted that forgiveness and sought restitution. I think that the fact there was choice in the matter is really important. And I think true forgiveness can only happen is if there is choice. But it's worth noting that that choice is on both sides. The end of the video where Craig is talking about the situation in South Africa, he says this, let me have the next slide. The very notion of forgiveness when imposed on those against whom something has been done, when you say to them, you have to forgive me, in a sense, it becomes another act of oppression. We might realize we've done wrong and seek forgiveness and not receive it. But I guess that takes us back to the quote, that it takes courage to have relationship. That, yeah, we can choose from our side. It doesn't necessarily mean that the other side's going to choose to respond. When the tables are turned, perhaps someone is coming to us seeking forgiveness. We have a choice whether or not to forgive them. It takes courage. Jesus talks in John's gospel about being the gate for the sheep, and he says this: I am the gate for the sheep. Whoever enters through me will be saved. They will come in, go out, and find pasture. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. Notice when Jesus talks about the gate, the sheep come in and go out. They go both ways. They're free to come and go. They're free to choose. And it's not just a once choice. It's a repeated choice. And I think it's the continual choice that brings the freedom. They can go out and find fresh pasture and come back into the safety of the sheepfold. And it's that repeated choice, that repeated making the right choice of where we should be and what we should be doing, that brings life to the full. And because we're human, because we fail, and we're not going to fail once, we're going to fail repeatedly, we need to repeatedly find ourselves in the situation where forgiveness is needed. And we've got the power to choose what we do in those situations. And our choice can bring life or cannot bring life. Jesus was consistent in showing us the power of choosing forgiveness. I was thinking about his encounter with the woman caught in adultery. The Pharisees bring Jesus this woman and suggest that she's stoned because that's what the law says. And Jesus says to them, let any one of you who is without sin be the first to throw the stone at her. And nobody threw a stone because nobody is without sin. And when nobody condemned her, Jesus said to the woman, well, neither do I. Now go and leave your life of sin. Because he offers forgiveness, but he also shows her the way for restitution. And he changed her whole life. She couldn't undo what she'd done. She couldn't undo that mistake. But she could move forward not sinning in that way again. She probably sinned in many other ways. But... you know, it was a freedom that Jesus gave her. And I think he also gave the Pharisees freedom because he challenged them and made them realize that, actually, I'm not without sin. I might need forgiveness myself. There might be things I've done. And I wonder, actually, how many of those Pharisees turned away from that woman and then went somewhere else and said, oh, to their brother, you know, can you forgive me for this error I've made? Because I've just realized I'm also a sinner. I love the bit in Luke where Jesus says, why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? Recognizing our own faults helps us forgive others. And whether we're at fault and we need forgiveness, or whether we're the ones that are doing the forgiving, forgiveness is powerful. And the choices that we make, and in fact, recognizing that we have a choice, empowers us. And we'll often find ourselves in situations where both are true. That we're at fault, but we also might need to forgive. Because relationships are complex. Nothing is black and white. And I've certainly experienced many things where I've been on kind of both sides at the same time. You know, I think I was working for a Red Cafe in Linden Church, and I can think of mistakes which I made and I needed to be forgiven, but at the same time, I was hurt and I needed to forgive. And obviously, as some of you know, I've, you know, in the past few years been through a divorce, and you know, it's certainly true. I made mistakes. I needed forgiveness, but I also need to forgive. I came across two quotes about forgiveness that I loved. The first one, again, was from Bell Hooks. Forgiveness is an act of generosity. It requires that we place releasing someone else from the prison of their guilt or anguish over our feelings of outrage or anger. By forgiving, we clear a path on the way to love. It's a gesture of respect. And another quote from Robin, I have no idea how to say his surname. She says this: forgiveness is a way of life that gradually transforms us from being helpless victims of our circumstances to powerful and loving co-creators of our reality. It is the fading away of the perceptions that cloud our ability to love. I particularly love that second quote, that by forgiving, we basically free ourselves. We rewrite the narrative of our reality because we choose to change the lens through which we are viewing things, that we start to see things a little bit more like God does, rather than our narrow lens of hurt, pain, our upbringing. It just opens things up. So my final slide, little summary in case you've fallen asleep while I've been waffling on. We all make mistakes, but whose lens are we viewing things through? We need to take responsibility for our mistakes. We need to repent, but also we need to take that next step and seek restitution. That's quite key. It's not just a verbal I'm sorry, but it's a changing what we do from this point on. And we have a choice. And that choice empowers us. I'm actually going to finish by reading again the poem I started with. Night will fall on you. Of course it will. You will find yourself wandering the desert of your failures. You will stand by the deathbed of your dreams, helpless and afraid. What hope do we have then? Beloved, when the Spirit wrapped itself in the rabbi's flesh, it declared that we are to have life in all its fullness. Yet we've forgotten that death is part of life, that existence grows from decay. We have forgotten that night is an opportunity to anticipate another sunrise.